Stephen and James. Our next presenter is Sarah Lindstrom Johnson, and she'll be talking about the school environment. Thank you.
So, talking about knowing your audience, I must admit that I underestimated all of you, and so I'm going to be talking using some graphs and pictures, but I didn't make enough handouts. I know there's some in the back, but perhaps if you say I forgot my glasses today, or perhaps share with a neighbor, I'll put them right here. Feel free to stand up and grab them if you need them, and I think there's still some in the back. So first of all, I want to acknowledge they got left off the abstract, and I feel horrible about that, but Drs. Gielen and Dr. Burke were very important in the design and conduct and evaluation of this activity. And what we were interested is rather than we always talk in school violence about the individual, and it makes sense because the individual student is the one who's perpetrating the violence or is the one that's the victim of the violence. So obviously addressing the individual is an important part of school violence prevention. However, we think that there's a role for the school environment in determining whether violence happens at the school or does not happen. And so that's kind of what we were investigating with this study. We have no financial relationships to disclose. So the reason we kind of had this notion of school environment as being important, there are some theories out there that address the environment's role in violence prevention. Most of these are not in the school setting. Most of these relate to either the neighborhood or society in general. So when we talk about the environment, traditionally in the literature it's been divided into the social environment and the physical environment. We had a great introduction to the social environment earlier, so I'm probably not going to do it as much justice. So some of our theories of the social environment, social cohesion and social capital, this came from the work in the neighborhoods of Sampson in Chicago. So basically, A cohesive school or cohesive environment is one where individuals have the same goals, where they know each other, where they're working towards the same end result. And in those environments, they have more social capital. When we talk about capital, money, it's currency, right? And so it's the ability to get things done. So if you are working towards the same goal and everyone's on board, you build up kind of this reserve of social capital. So when something needs to happen, when you need to lay down the law, or when you want something to happen, you have that ability. So these are kind of all at the organizational level. The individual level, criminologist Travis Hershey, long time ago, 1969, social control theory. So you know what? There are certain reasons why individuals are either involved in violence or why they're not. And he talks about individuals' attachment to things, their commitment, their involvement, and their beliefs. So do they either buy into kind of society's general norms, or in the case of a school, whatever that school message or mode is. So that's kind of the social environment in a quick little nutshell. Physical environment is fascinating. Environmental psychology literature really has talked about this. Crime prevention through environmental design. So we know that places, so we can talk about the spatial design, so we can talk about how a space is organized. Is it a space we can talk about? Is it a space where you can pick out individuals, where there's no anonymity? Anonymity, there you go. There's no anonymity, so where you can see people and you can know what's happening. Is it an environment that looks cared about? So it is an environment that you can see that someone has ownership. They talk about territoriality. Are there signs around? Are there indicators of someone in an environment? This is a space that, someone's going to stop me if I'm not doing something that I should. So the physical environment. And then there's an interaction between the two of them that's been less talked about. In schools, we know that violence happens at certain times and certain places. And we can think about the characteristics of those times and places. So your hallways, your stairwells, kind of thinking of the physical environment and how that relates. The lunchroom, time in between classes, times where you have lots of students perhaps moving around. If you're in a school or you see school with lockers, in the main hallways, they're opening their lockers, standing, chatting. How does that interact with all those people moving down the hallway? Someone's going to get bumped and something's going to happen. So there's obviously an interaction between the school social and physical environment. So knowing this, knowing these theories, we thought, all right, great, we have theories, but how do these really work in the school environment? What are the aspects of the school's social and physical environment that are represented by these? Well, and who better to ask than students? Students are the ones perpetrating, being victims, or being bystanders to this violence. And students have a lot of knowledge, I think, about what's going on in their schools, whether or not they're participating in it. And we also wanted to kind of get an idea about the mechanisms. Okay, so it's great that we can identify aspects of the school, but how do these really play out in the day-to-day? Are they the things that are responsible for the start of violence, the stop of violence? What makes violence more severe? So we looked at those factors too. All right, now here's where I get a little methods on you. So the methodology we used is called concept mapping. If you're an educator, you're very familiar with concept mapping, or if you've been a student, concept mapping, the idea that there are groups of ideas and those groups of ideas have relationships with each other. So it's using the same thing, except it has a statistical basis to it. So it's qualitative in nature. We qualitatively get ideas from students, and students qualitatively analyze the data and give us their feedback. But in the middle of that, there's this quantitative portion. So we use some multidimensional scaling and cluster analysis to do the quantitative portion, and I'll explain that a little bit later. So we had three sessions. So the process took three sessions. We were fortunate to work with two different groups of students. I'm from Johns Hopkins, so I worked in the Baltimore City school system. Baltimore City historically does have a problem with school violence, so we had students and administrators in schools that were very interested in this topic, which was wonderful. So the first session's that brainstorming session. Students answered a prompt. The prompt was, name aspects of your school environment that relate in any way, good or bad, to a student's experience of violence. So very vague. And we left the definition of violence up to students. The next session, we took those statements, we put them on little cards. We went back to the students and we said, sort these cards. Sort these cards into piles based on their similarity. Only rule, a pile can't be all cards, and each pile has to have more than one card, so it has to have at least two cards. And then they rated each statement for the importance of the initiation, the start of violence, the stop, the cessation of violence, or the severity of violence that occurred. So we're getting kind of into those mechanisms. We went home, we put it into this software, which is a godsend when you're writing a dissertation, because it does that multidimensional scaling and cluster analysis. And at some point in February, I'm going to have to explain what it did, but you put it in that software, out pops, I'll show you in a second, out pops a map, which translates the sort information, so those piles, combines all the students' piles and translates it into a distance map of their similarity. So then we took that distance map back to students and kind of, with their help, picked out or pulled out the concepts. Remember, it's concept mapping. So we pulled out the concepts from that map of ideas. So I wanted to first give you an idea of some of the statements that they came up with. Students could articulate a role for the school environment in violence. In Group A, we had 77 statements, 77 individual ways that students said their school environment influenced violence. Group B had 55 ways. I didn't just pick arbitrarily. I picked the top 10 statements that were ranked for cessation or the stop of violence. So poor communication, so obviously student interactions, student communication, school police. Interestingly, school police were important. A relationship with school police was important, which you don't often see in the literature. It's not just that they're there, it's that they feel cared about. Gangs came up, obviously probably for cessation. Not having gangs would be beneficial. Group B pulled some of the school environment things that they felt the students' achievements were highlighted around schools. Gets that belonging aspect of school. They have a longer school day. They thought that was beneficial. There wasn't the time for conflicts, so another possible dimension. And then an involved principal, so you see some of the staff factors popping up. All right, so again, those were the statements. Students sorted those statements. Here's the result of the multidimensional scaling. So I'm going to walk over here. Each of these dots with a number represents a statement. So if we look at Salmon 53 and 62, just like when you're reading a map, they're closer together. Statements that are closer together were rated as more similar. More students sorted them in the same pile than, say, Statement 53 and Statement 20. They're very dissimilar ideas. Students didn't sort them together. You can see while looking at this point map that there's already some grouping that you would naturally kind of think, well, these are all together. This is probably representing some sort of aspect of the school environment. And you can pick out different paths. Before we move to the next slide, which gives those boundaries, I want to say that we could draw one big circle around this and say, you know what, all of those ideas are representative of how the school environment influences violence. We could divide the map in half and have this pile over here and this pile of statements over here and have some characteristic that separates them. So you can divide the map up in any number of ways. That's where the students got to come in and say, let us tell you, us with the expertise, how many different aspects of the environment are represented by this map. That makes the most sense. And here's what they came up with, and that's the handout. It's very, very small, but the handout does blow this up a little bit. So here's Group A, and here's Group B. They each, interestingly, came up with they divided their map into eight different sections. Some of the sections, or some of the clusters, as we call them, they came up with their peers. So when they talked about the environment, they didn't differentiate between students and the school environment. Students make up the school environment, and they very easily, us in research, tend to confuse things, but they were like, you know, students are in the school environment. They're the ones contributing to the school environment. So you have peer relationships, power dynamics. So Group A split the student categories. Group B just kind of had a student behavior category. Another interesting aspect, how they define the environment. School environment is not the boundaries of the school. It includes the neighborhoods as well. So Group A had outside influence, and Group A was kind of, it's traditionally a more violent school. It traditionally has a lot of drugs, dropout, things like that in the environment around the school, abandoned houses, things like that. And so Group A's definition of the outside environment said, you know what, those problems come onto the school campus. Group B is an African-American school. It's in Baltimore. You can kind of view of schools of choice, so you can move around, in a predominantly white neighborhood. And so their environment aspect had to do with feelings that they weren't members of the community, that people did not want them there, and how that played out to their feeling of being at school and wanting to be at school and the value of their education, and then the violence that occurred. We have two student-teacher relationships that show up. We have school authorities, school safety efforts. Students mainly talked about school police rather than anything school security cameras or school metal detectors, though the schools did have those. And then the learning environment. So the other thing we can do with this map is that we can look at the depth or the other dimension of the map. So what we can do is we have the ratings for each statement is how important they are for the start, stop, and the severity of violence. We can get a mean rating for the cluster. So we know all of the statements that are in this cluster. Well, if we add up all of their averages and divide by the number of students, we have an idea of how important that cluster is. In this case, we're looking at initiation. So the taller the cluster, the more important it was for in this case, the start of violence. So if we look at the map, you can see that there now pop up to be areas that are important for the start of violence and areas that are less important. So as you probably would expect, student aspects are important. The violence norm is important. Interestingly, in this outside environment here and here is very important for the start of violence. Learning environment and relationships less important in Group A. Group B had high teacher turnover and some conflict. They had set a new principle, things like that. And so they actually did see some role in their interactions with staff. Notions of, if you worked with students, notions of respect are very big. And they just didn't feel that they were getting the respect from the faculty or from the school administration and teachers. And we can look at this by cessation and severity. Severity almost mimicked initiation. So clusters that were important for the start of violence were also important for making violence more severe. Cessation, however, was fascinating. And it's an interesting thing. So this again shows the relationship between initiation and severity. I took the labels off because it made it very, very crowded up here. But we have in total 16 clusters, 8 are gray, 8 are black, representing group A and group B. This is that mean rating that was represented in bars before. So if you look there, you can kind of see the range of statements for initiation, and you can see that statements that were high in initiation are usually pretty high in severity. These down here that actually go up for cessation are kind of your school environment and your teacher factors, which we would expect to be involved more in the stop of violence. But what's more interesting is this. Not a wide range. Students did not think any of the statements that they generated themselves were important for the stop of violence. So it's either, I mean, you can unpack this, I guess, however you like, but students have a harder time identifying what's responsible for the stop of violence, or they think that the school environment doesn't really have a role for the stop of violence. The school environment's role might be in preventing the situation from ever occurring. Maybe our individually focused interventions, when the situation occurs, then we need students who are able to have multiple solutions to the conflict problem, or able to perceive a conflict problem not as serious as they might have. So it's kind of some interesting results. So we've kind of talked through these. Great, there is a role for the school environment. That role includes the individual and the outside environment. We were just talking about the stop of violence. So what I'd love to do is I'd love to look at administrators and teachers, other people who are familiar with violence, and kind of look at how they envision the school environment's role, and then perhaps we can get a match and say, here's what students see are important, here's what teachers see are important, because if teachers and administrators see it's important, maybe it's going to get more, it's easier to change, you have the impetus to change it. If we can match those, maybe we can start seeing some intervention efforts. Different groups of students, it's a very urban environment. We know that suburban schools and rural schools have different types of violence that are more prevalent in those environments. How does the school environment differ? And then when we're thinking about interventions, fortunately we are kind of seeing interventions that are including the school environment, but it's kind of still an amorphous construct. It's like we realize that because individuals make up the environment, if we change individuals, we're going to change the environment. But we're not really measuring what's being done to the environment, what maybe social norms campaigns are going on. We don't really have a notion of when schools are implementing these kind of more universal programs, how they're addressing the school environment. So kind of another thing to think about. So, thank you very much, and questions are at the end.
All right. Thank you.